Chevra, we are learning Meseches Sukkah, and we got involved in this conversation where the Tana Rabbi Yehuda says that in order to be in the Ohel, right, this begins on Chaf Amid Beis, Rabbi Yehuda says that in order to be in the Ohel, it has to be man-made. He derives from the construction of the Mishkan, by Yefroses HaOhel al Mishkan, that the that to be an ohel, it has to be constructed by a person. As such, if you have an area that, like, the salt bites at it, or you have an area where some animals dig it out, so that's not considered an ohel. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. The Gemara asks a question, Rabbi Yehuda, from everyone's favorite Para Aduma case, that the children for Para Aduma, right? Wouldn't it be awesome, like, to be a Para Aduma child? And, like, you spend your entire childhood on a rock, and it's like all you're looking forward to is, like, that one day when the big fat oxen are going to come and they'll take you down to the river, and then you'll finally have your moment, you know, and you'll fill up the cup. There's machlekes, whether you drop the cup down on a line, whether you go down and fill it up. But these kids, like, being raised on top of the rocks. And the reason why they're raised on top of the rocks is we don't want Tuma to get to them. Well, here's the problem. The problem is that this is not man-made. And in order to be an Ohel, it has to be man-made. So the Gemara answers, well, it's very wide. When Rabbi Yehuda says that to be an ohel, it has to be man-made, that's talking about something that is not melo egrof, but something that is melo egrof, if it is as like a fist size, then it is going to be an ohel, even though it's not man-made. Now, fundamentally, the Gemara could have said that at least in the case where they put the doors on top of the shvarim, that is considered man-made. No? For some reason, this Gemara, when it has a whole conversation, Ayin Ohel has to be man-made. And we ask a question from the Para Aduma kids, that there's a machlokis, do they put the doors on the oxen, or they just sit on the oxen themselves, whatever it is. And the Gemara has to develop a yesod, that if it is wide, if it's kimelo egrof, then it is going to be a chatzitza b'fnei hatumah, even though it is not man-made. It is a little bit difficult that the Gemara seems to be ignoring the question of, seems to be ignoring the fact that the doors, at least, are man-made. Or putting the doors on the ox is a human activity. So I'm not sure why this is true, but my guess is that what the Gemara is really getting at is, at least in the case of the oxen themselves, right? Rabbi Yehuda holds that lo hayu mevi'in delasos el shvarim, that they did not actually bring any doors. They'd only have oxen. What Rabbi Yehuda is saying is that it's an ohel. The kids would be on the ox. How could it be an ohel? But it's not man-made. The ox, after all, is not man-made. Maybe the doors on top of the ox are, but the ox itself isn't. So for that, the Gemara has to answer that it's very wide. And anything that is very wide, right, that's the Gemara, seven lines on the bottom, Amar Rebbe Lazar, Mod Rebbe Yehuda Kimlo Egrof. Rebbe Yehuda agrees when something is a full-fledged ohel, if it's really wide, right? So then it will prevent tuma, even though it is not man-made. That's what the Gemara says. Hello, Ms. Squar. How are you?
Hey, so I'm good, thank you. So the one thing that I guess I find a little bit challenging about this is we translated egrof as like a fist, like the equivalent of a tefach, right?
A fist apparently is like larger than a tefach. That's what we have to say, right?
Okay, because I was gonna like, I guess I was wondering how large are we really talking? Because otherwise, you're basically like adding the caveat of it needs to be wide of unknown dimension, broadens the category tremendously to become like potentially all inclusive.
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Like, I guess, I don't know, we never defined what exactly like you're more than a tefach is, right?
Right. We're saying if it's melo egrof, then it's
right.
Again, how much more is an egrof than a tefach? I don't know.
Like, I guess what I'm saying is to add the caveat of, oh, if it's wide, then it could be considered an ohel and block tuma. I just feel like by you're just expanding the category of what could be considered an ohel by a very large margin.
Potentially, but again, we don't know how large that margin is.
One, right, I guess.
I need to define terms. Like the whole halachic enterprise involves like making definitions. Again, the basic idea that the Gemara is getting at is that although Rabbi Yehuda says an ohel has to be man-made, but if it's very wide, it does not have to be man-made. Now, of course, it is problematic in the sense of Rabbi Yehuda's source that an ohel has to be man-made is from the pasuk Vayifros es ha-ohel al ha-mishkan. No? That was not a bare minimum-sized ohel. And the mishkan wasn't massive, but it was larger than a fist. No? So if that's the case, again, in my mind, I don't understand how this works. Because how can Rabbi Yehuda learn from that pasuk of Vayifros es ha-ohel al ha-mishkan that it has to be man-made, when in that particular case, it does not have to be man-made because it's very wide? So that I do not, if any of you have an answer to that question, I would be appreciative. I am stuck. Dr. Lang, it seemed like you had something.
I don't have an answer to the question, so you're still stuck. However, is egrof something we use in any other case? It's just not a measure I've ever heard of.
An egrof?
Yeah, like, is this unique to, and I have sort of a subsequent question, which my understanding was Rabbi Yehuda's, he's in the minority here, right? Like, is this how we define ohel? He's the only one that feels this way.
Yeah, I think Rabbi Yehuda is the only one who feels that an ohel has to be man-made, and only within Rabbi Yehuda do we have to come up with this distinction of wider versus not as wide. So Rabbi Yehuda is the minority opinion, that's for sure.
We're now, spending a lot of time on an minority opinion.
In terms of where this measurement of egrof comes in, so Rashi over here tells me where else I have the measurement of melo egrof. And let's look at this Rashi. It's like the fifth wide line in Rashi. Kimlo egrof, zot Rashi, ohel shirachav, kimlo egrof, shu yoser mitafach, if you have a tent that is as wide as an egrof, which is more than a tefach. Mod Rabbi Yehuda, she'afo pisheino asui bidei adam, choshuv li yus ohel, debe melo egrof matzinu choshuv la ma'or. We have the measurement of melo egrof, which has chashivos, it's considered significant when it comes to bringing light in. She'no asui bidei adam, ket namba ahalos im seches b'choros meisinim la, in the parak of Al Eilu Mumin, Ma'or Shalom Nasu Bidei Odom Shi'ura Lahotzias Atuma La'avir Kimlo Egrof. Basically, the issue is if I have like a window between two buildings or two rooms, buildings in Hilchos Ohel means rooms. At what point do I assume that if you have a corpse in that room and there's a window between that room and this room, at what point do I assume that the person in the room where the corpse isn't, that person becomes tamei? But that's the question. So the Gemaras and Bechoros, etc., speak about how you have two different types of windows. There are windows that are intended for light, and then there are windows that are intended for just bringing air. And when it comes to a window that's intended for air, the measurement is a melo egrof, which is not just anyone's fist. It's the egrof of this person, ben avatiach, etc., which is a large fist. His fist was as large as an average person's head. So melo egrof is a growth of the guy, he's named Ben Avatiach, like he's the son of a watermelon. I don't know exactly what he is or something like that, but his fist is the size of a head. So yeah, there is another time in Shas where the shear of Melo Egrof comes up, and it's also relevant for Tuman Tahara, but over there, the context is in terms of these windows, etc. That's what Rashi is referencing. So far, so good. Ms. Gutman, how is Judaism?
It's doing good. It's doing really, yeah, you know. I was just thinking about what you were saying about the Mishkan not being a good proof. And the Gezeirah Shavah, it's also like highlighting the Kiyamus Ba'ohel Pasuk. So I was thinking maybe the Kiyamus Ba'ohel Pasuk is referring to a Tefach type Ohel. And then the Mishkan would be a Malay Egrof. So the reason why it's an Ohel is not because it's man-made, but because it's very wide.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. So now what you just did is you just turned the Gemara on its head. Because the Gemara says that according to Rabbi Yehuda, an Ohel has to be man-made. And his proof text is the Mishkan.
Mm-hmm. Well, his proof text is the Gezeirah Shavah between the word Ohel
and the Mishkan. Right.
And the Mishkan.
So like...
So like they're both teaching different... Right.
The word Ohel by Tuma is only one Tefach. That's true. But if I'm learning from the Mishkan, that means I'm learning... I'm learning from a larger Ohel. I do...
Yeah, no, it's still a question.
Okay. Thank you. I want to come back to the Tosis over here about Ohel Zorok in a few minutes, but I want to read some more Gemara. Let's start from 7 lines in the bottom. Tanginami Hachi, Umoda Rabbi Yehuda b'shakifin ubenekike hasalaim. Rabbi Yehuda agrees when you have rocks that fell down, like right near where I live, and by the A train on Bendon Avenue, there's like a big sign that says like rocks might fall and they have stuff to protect. No? So let's say rocks fall down. So in that case, the rocks are going to be considered an ohel. Even though Rabbi Yehuda says to be an ohel, it has to be osui b'dei adam. If the rock falls down, that's called an ohel. Also in the kike slaim, if you have like rocks that broke open, that's called an ohel. The idea is, how come it's called an ohel? Doesn't it have to be man-made? The answer is that Rabbi Yehuda agrees by wide stuff, and these salaim and the kike, these shakifin and the kike slaim are wide. Comma, period, semicolon, whatever. So now the Gemara goes on. Bahare delas yish b'kama egrofin uktan Rabbi Yehuda omer olayim avin delasos Elashvarim. Right? The Gemara has a kasha. It says, hey, how come Rabbi Yehuda says that they did not bring doors? Why not? The door could also be an ohel because it's really wide. And anything that's really wide, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is an ohel by definition. So why does Rabbi Yehuda refuse to mention this idea of the doors? That's the Gemara's kasha. So the Gemara answers, Amar Abaye, lo chutzrichu lo havid losses. Abaye is saying that according to Rabbi Yehuda, en hachanami, if you bring losses, it would work. But lo chutzrichu lo havid losses. They didn't have to. right? You could just have the oxen themselves. You don't have to bring vlosses. Rava Amar, lo hayu mevim vlosses kol ikar, shemepnei shadato shel tinok gasa alav, shema yotzi rosho ha'echa me'evarav, mitame bekever. Anyone want to explain this to me? It looks like someone's trying to explain, but it's on mute. Yeah, Rachel?
We were saying last time that if there's a door, then the kid will feel like he's so cool, and then he might overstretch one of his limbs, and then possibly...
Yeah, basically, because the door is like a very wide thing, the kids are going to get all excited, and they'll bend over then because they're not worried. If you're on a tightrope, you're not going to bend over. If you're on like a little animal, it's a little too scary to bend over. So what Rabbi Yehuda is saying is they did not bring Dlossos because he's worried that the kid would stick out his head or stick out one of his limbs. And in that way become tummy. The concern is that the kid might reach over a space where there is going to be tumah. That's the Gemara suggestion. Let's go on. Ritame bekever atame, and he become tame. The Gemara says with a kever at the bottom, a hidden kever, a safe kever. Rashi says, etc. Tanya kavasi the Rava. We have a brisa that supports Rava, who says that the concern is that the kid's going to reach over. The kid will get all excited or whatever. Ella, what you do is you bring Egyptian oxen, who are exceedingly fat. Again, I don't know that much about oxen. I don't know if Egyptian oxen are fatter than other oxen. But the Gemara says they bring Egyptian oxen who have very fat stomachs. Vatinokos yoshvin algabehen. The kids sit on top of those oxen. Bekosa shal emibidehen, and they have stone cups. Higil shiloach yardu umilum. The olu the yashvu lahen algabehen. When they get to Shiloach, they get to Silwan, they jump off the oxen, they fill up the water, they go back, they sit on the animals again. That's the end of this Gemara in terms of just the pure Ohel Sugya. So the pure Ohel Sugya basically is, just in a nutshell, that Rabbi Yehuda says that to be an Ohel, it has to be man-made, but if it's very wide, it doesn't have to be man-made. Even though the doors are very wide, nonetheless, Rabbi Yehuda says they didn't use doors to protect the kids from the tumah. They would not use doors, Rabbi Yehuda says, because he's worried that the kids, b'nei shadaito shaltino gasa olav, the kids will get too excited and they might they might become tumah. So now the Gemara has a kasha. V'harei mita. D'yesh b'kam egrofim. Utnan v'bihud omer nohagim hayinu shayinu yishenim tachas amita b'fnei hazakenim. Rabbi Yehuda says that the bed is not an ohel. The practice was that they would sleep under the bed in the sukkah. Right, our practice was nohagin hayinu b'fnei hazakenim, by all the gedolei hadar with them in the sukkah, and the kids would sleep under the bed, or the people would sleep under the bed. So the kasha is, but what do you mean? The bed is very wide. If the bed is very wide, it's an ohel, even though it's not asui bidei adam. In this case, it's not asui bidei adam in the sense of it's not meant to really be an ohel. It's just a bed. So the Gemara's kasha is, it should be an ohel, because It should be an ohel because it's very wide. And for the Gemara, I think the answer is shiny mita ho'il uligaba asuya. What does that mean? Shani mita ho'il uligaba asuya.
Is it that a bed is made specifically for the top?
Right. You use the top of a bed, not the bottom, and therefore.
The bottom's just going to be
Right. Sleeping under the bed doesn't mean that like you're under an ohel, because the bed isn't really an ohel. An ohel is something that's intended to protect the stuff underneath it. So a bed can't be an ohel, even though it's really wide, but the bed does not protect the stuff underneath it. People use the top of their beds, not the bottom. Shani mita ho'el uligaba asuyan. It's made for the top. So he says, one second, go slowly. Shvarim nami ligaban asuyim. Right? When oxen, what do you do with an ox? Do you use the top of an ox or the bottom of an ox? Do you use the top of the ox, the Gemara says. So if that's the case, so then the ox is also not a good ohel. Just like the bed is not a good ohel because it's intended to use the top, the ox is also not a good ohel because it's intended for the top. So the Gemara says, no, Kiyosu Rav and Rebbe Lazar, Shaini Shvarim Ho'el U'meginim Al Haro'im B'chama B'nei HaChama U'begishamim B'nei HaGishamim. What's that mean?
Talmidei Chachamim only put their shoes under the bed and only the correct shoes in the right season.
So yes, but that's the next line in the Gemara. First, oxen.
The shepherds sleep underneath the ox.
Shepherds sleep under the oxen. If it's too sunny or if it's too rainy, they use the ox kind of as a, what's it called? As
an ohel.
As protection, as an ohel. Now, I'm not exactly sure how you could use an ox as protection, because the ox would probably walk away and then you're not going to be so protected. So the exact metzius over here, I don't get. But the Gemara says that the ox has the intention of an ohel because the shepherds use the bottom of it. So he says, well, if that's the case, the bed also has the status of an ohel because you put your shoes underneath the bed. So effectively, we have a kasha. How come Rabbi Yehuda is saying that they slept underneath the bed in the sukkah when the bed is very wide? If it's very wide, by definition, it's an ohel. If it's an ohel, they shouldn't be able to sleep underneath it. Right? Because you have to be in the sukkah. That's the Gemara's kasha. Ela Amar Rava. Shani Shavarim Ho'ov Asuyin Lahagin Al B'nei Me'ayin Shalahem. Shenemar Or Ubasar Talbi Sheni. The Gemara says that the animals are an ohel because the pasuk calls it an ohel. The animal's stomach is protecting the internal organs. Or ubasar tabisheni, they put skin on me, and they cover up my bones and my sinews. That means that by definition, the animal is an ohel, even though it's meant to use the top of it, not to use the bottom. The thing that, sometimes people use the bottom, that's like too weird. We're not into that. How come the animal is considered an ohel and the bed is not an ohel? The answer is the pasuk says that an animal is an ohel. It's a verse in the book of Job. And the pasuk says, Oru basar talbisheni, ubat samos vigidim desochecheni. there's a pasuk that says that the animal is an ohel. Now, this notion that sometimes there is a pasuk and that pasuk creates a halachic reality does appear in some other areas of halacha. There's a machlekes in Rishonim about when you tie tefillin. So there's a knot for the tefillin. Do you have to make the knot every day or not? The Rabbi Eliyahu in the Tosafot says you have to make the knot every day. The problem is you have to make the knot every day. So that means that the knot is, by definition, not a kesher shel kayama. And therefore, you should be able to make the knot on Shabbos. And it's clear from the Gemara elsewhere that you can't make the knot on Shabbos. So the Mordechai writes that since the Torah calls it a knot, it's a knot. Ordinarily, there are rules of knots, that it has to last for 7 days, 30 days, whatever it is. But in this context, the Torah calls it a knot, it's a knot. A similar idea is here in Ari Gemara, that the Torah calls the ox an ohel. It might not meet the standard definitions of ohel, but the Torah calls it an ohel, therefore it's an ohel. That's what the Gemara is getting at. Oru basar tal bisheni, batzamos v'gidim tisochecheni. Iba yaseima, the Gemara has another explanation, Rabbi Yehuda l'tameh. In other words, the question is, how come according to Rabbi Yehuda, you're allowed to sleep under the bed, and you can, and still the ox is going to be a ohel for tumah purposes? So the Gemara answers that the ox is an ohel because it's a pasuk, and the ox is an ohel, but you're not allowed to sleep, you are allowed to sleep under the bed because that's not an ohel. That's what the Gemara says. The second explanation of the Gemara, Iba is Emi Reb Yehuda L'Tayme, Dama Sukkah Diras Keva B'inon, V'Havalei Mita Diras Arai, V'Sukkah Ohel Keva, Lo Asi Ohel Arai, U'Mevato Ohel Keva. Meaning, Rabbi Yehuda holds that a sukkah is an Ohel Keva, right? A sukkah, according to Rabbi Yehuda, can be over 20 amos. The bed is an Ohel, but it's an Ohel Arai. The bed is not a permanent ohel in the sense of, since the bed's ohelness is just to put like shoes underneath it, that's not a real permanent structure. The sukkah is much more significant than the bed. Therefore, although the bed is an ohel, but it loses its ohel status when it's in comparison to the sukkah, because the sukkah is ohel keva. The bed is ohel arai, and ohel arai cannot beat an ohel keva. And ohel keva is a more serious thing. That's the second explanation of Rabbi Yehuda. The first explanation of Rabbi Yehuda, again, is that the ox is an ohel, because the pasuk says it's an ohel. The second explanation is that you're right. These things, even the bed should be an ohel. It is an ohel. The reason why they would sleep under the bed is because a bed is not an ohel when it is with an ohel keva. A bed is an ohel arai. When you have a bed inside a real sukkah, and the sukkah is an ohel keva, then the bed loses its status. It seemed like someone had a question before.
My question, I think you answered it, that there are two different explanations, I thought. Oh, he rejected the first explanation with the pasuk, but there's just...
Yeah, I don't know if we're rejecting it. It's an Iba Yaseima on the Gemara. In other words, there are two suggestions, two possibilities, two ways of answering the question. Oh. The Gemara goes on, Reb Shimon, the Omer Nami, Sukkah Diras Keva B'inon. Right? The Gemara in Dav Zayin had a bunch of people who said Sukkah Diras Keva. One of them is Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says that sukkah is dires keva. And still Rabbi Shimon holds that osi ohel arai umavatil ohel keva. According to Rabbi Shimon, you're not allowed to sleep under the bed. Rabbi Shimon holds, like Rabbi Yehuda, that a sukkah is ohel keva. Well, if that's the case, you should be able to sleep under the bed because ohel arai cannot be mavatil ohel keva. So Gemara says, no, Baha Pligi, Marsava Asarai, Vata Or Keva, Marsava, Lo Asi Oel Arai, Mavata Ohal Keva. Right? Everyone holds, or not everyone, but both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon hold that the sukkah is an ohel keva. They dispute whether an ohel arai can come and be mevato on ohel keva. That point is disputed. Okay, that's the Gemara. Now, I just want to make 2 points over here. First, let's just do this top tesis on number bays quickly. Batzama segidin to sochecheni. So Tosas comments that that pasuk is a pasuk in Eov. We're using that pasuk to say that the ox is an ohel, because the ox covers up the insides, the bones, whatever. Tosas writes that the pasuk is written by a human. Eov is like giving one of his long speeches, and he's talking about humans. So Tosas afagav the high krab adam ksiv. Right, if a human is called an ohel, so an animal is certainly called an ohel. Okay, right? Animals have bigger stomachs than most humans. We'll say it like that. So if a human is an ohel, certainly the animal. Let's go back to the Tosfos on Amud Aleph. The Tosfos. The Algabehen Delosos. Throughout Shas, there is a big sugya about Ohel Zarek, whether Ohel Zarek is Shmei Ohel or Ohel Zarek is Lav Shmei Ohel, right? When I speak about an Ohel, usually that's a tent. Usually tents don't move. Ohel Zarek means you have a moving tent. Does that count as an Ohel? Does it not count as an Ohel? Right, the Gemara says that there's something called Tumas Eretz Ha'amim, that the world outside of Eretz Yisrael is presumed to be Tamei. According to some, the idea is that the Meisei Midbar, the Meisei Mabel, excuse me, that in Parshas Noach, there was a Mabel, right? There's a flood. I think that much is fairly basic. So there's a flood and people died. That's what it says. So it could be that the Meisei Mabel are all over the place. The Mabel never made it to Eretz Yisrael. The Mabel never made it to Eretz Yisrael. So it could be that you're not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael as a Kohen, let's say, because you're potentially getting yourself involved in Tumah. The Gemara has a discussion, can I leave Eretz Yisrael in a box? Can I go out in a Shida Teva Umigdol? But I have a big box. I'm going to leave Eretz Yisrael in my box. Is that permitted or not? So that depends on whether Ohel Zarek, Shmei Ohel, or Lav Shmei Ohel. So Machlokes Reb Yehuda Hanasi and Reb Yossi or something. So Machlokes with the Ohel Zarek. So Zaktaisis. Manda Omar in Gittin and in Nozir and in Erefin and in Chagiga, the Ohel Zarek, Lo Shmei Ohel, Lochot Bifnei Hatuma. There is an opinion that a moving tent is not a tent. If that's the case, so how do you protect these kids from Tumah? You're going to put them on top of an ox. The oxen move? Yes. You're going to put them on top of boards on top of an ox. Do the boards on top of the ox move? Yes, right? It's all moving. So if you hold that, oh, Zorik, Leishmei, Ohel, what does it help? Matzil Meimar, the Savak Reb Yehuda Dam Rishmaitin, Lohay Mivin Zlasos, Ella Shvarim, Shekresosein Rechavos, but Afapisha Gam Haim Ohel Zarok, Mikomakom, Biditu, Goli Rachmana, Dechashivi, Ohel, Kiddarshim, Midichsib, Ubaatsamos Vigidim, Tisokhacheni. Okay, anyone want to explain this line to me?
Is it the importance of the Ohel? That, like this.
I don't know the importance.
Okay. I'm misreading them.
Again, Tosfos is bothered by your question. Well, Choshev Ohel means, is it considered an Ohel?
Okay. That's what I'm misreading.
It doesn't mean that it's important. That's all it means, is it's considered an Ohel. So Tosfos is bothered by your question. The question is, if you hold Ohel Zoruk is not an Ohel, so what are you going to do? Right? You're riding on these animals. You're trying to protect yourself from Tumah. But it's Ohel Zoruk. It's moving. Something that's moving doesn't protect you from Tumah. So Tosfos answers, well, you're riding on an animal, and an animal, according to the Gezeiras HaKosov, the Pasuk says an animal's an Ohel. And once the Pasuk says the animal's an Ohel, even though it's moving, it still is a full-fledged Ohel. Because that's what the Pasuk says. Pasuk beats all. And that's Tosfos's idea. Apparently, the opinion that says that they would bring the doors, not that they would just ride on the oxen. The opinion that says they would bring the doors, that opinion has to hold that Ohel Zoruk is an Ohel. Right? Tosfos is only saying that we could solve the Ohel Zoruk issue according to the opinion that they are riding on the animal itself. Because the animal itself, the Torah says, is an Ohel. But according to the other opinion, that they are not on the animal, that they are on the boards on top of the animal. So the only way you can solve Tumah is if you hold that Ohel Zoruk is still an Ohel. You hold that movable Ohel is an Ohel. Let's take a deep breath. And we're going to talk about Ohel Zoruk after Rachel asks her question.
So I was kind of wondering this before, in terms of the pasuk that we're deriving, that the ox is considered an Ohel, does it matter that the pasuk doesn't actually say the word Ohel, and that's just implying that because it says...
Schach.
Yeah.
Schach means Ohel. I
always?
It sounds like Ohel. It's Schach. Like, the Schach is covering you. It's an Ohel.
But yeah. Earlier in the shir, you said an Ohel we view as something that is providing shelter. So it seems like in that way it would be equivalent. Like, I'm citing, you know, Rabbi Schwartz, but that I'm citing the Gemara according to Schwartz, but that is what you said earlier.
I think that's true. Yeah. Schach, okay. Schach is an Ohel. That's right.
Okay, I was just wondering if that was like in all cases. I don't know. Maybe I'm picking it apart a little bit because I haven't questioned.
Yeah, I guess I don't know of. I don't know of any case where something would be treated as schach, but it's not an ohel. As a matter of fact, a schach is an ohel. That's. But basically, what Tosfos is saying is that the ox is considered an ohel, even though it's moving, because the pasuk says it's an ohel. Now, I want to make a few points over here. You know, there's a famous truth of the Nodeb Yehuda, where the Nodeb Yehuda says that you're not allowed to use umbrellas on Shabbos because it's an ohel. The Nodeb Yehuda writes that there's an Issur D'Oraisa to use an umbrella on Shabbos because you're making a tent. That's the Nodeb Yehuda. He reinterprets the Gemara in Shabbos in a complicated way. The Chassam Sofer says the Nodeb Yehuda is wrong. It's not Osir Min HaTorah. The Nodeb Yehuda says using a umbrella is an Issur D'Oraisa. It's making an Ohel. So they ask the Nodeb, this is the Nodeb Yehuda, the second volume, Siman Lamed. Madura Tinyonis, Siman Lamed. So they ask the Nodeb Yehuda, say, dude, Rabbi Nodeb Yehuda, you're a nice guy and all that. But how could it be an ohel? You carry, you move that umbrella. So it's an ohel zarak. It moves from place to place. Anything that moves from place to place is by definition not an ohel. Ohel zarak is not an ohel. So the note of Yehuda answers, he says, no, learn Sukkah Daf Chaf Aleph carefully. What the Gemara is saying is that an animal is an ohel because of this pasuk, or ubasar talbisheni, etc. As Tosfos pointed out on Amud Beis, that pasuk is really about humans, not about animals. Therefore, a human, the ohel, would not be subject to the regular rule that ohel zarek is not an ohel. That's the Nodi Behuda's interesting approach. Again, Rachel, you seem really like...
Because the umbrella isn't a human.
Well, the human is holding the umbrella.
But that's not the shelter.
No, but it's sheltering a human. It's all considered...
But no, what we said is that...
Yes, the umbrella itself would stay in one place. I open an umbrella, it's going to stay where it is.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The reason why it might be an Ohel Zarek is because the human is holding the umbrella, right? People know what an umbrella is. Okay, good. Right, so the human is holding the umbrella. I'm moving with the umbrella. I, Ohel Zarek. The answer is that by humans, the rule of Ohel Zarek does not apply, says the Nadi Behuda.
So he would also think that doors on top of cows could move because the cow is moving the door.
That's correct. And perhaps that's the way he learns the Gemara. Yeah? In other words, our Tosfos is saying it only about the animal itself, not about the doors on top of the animal. But the Nodi Yehuda would presumably say that since the animal is an ohel, the door on top of it is also an animal. Ad kan, that's grand. The big issue with ohel zarek that everyone talks about is, you know, a kohen can't become tamei to mason. Now, years ago, like 10, 12 years ago, they found out that the flight that left Israel would fly over Chulon, and there's a cemetery in Chulon, and the flights were flying right on top of that cemetery in Chulon. And then this became a whole cause celeb. And basically the Israeli aviation agency had to change the flight patterns because of this. They found out afterwards that flights that leave JFK fly over a cemetery in Woodside, Queens. Now, there's a problem. You're a Kayan. You're in a plane. Are you becoming Tamei? Well, you're going to say, I'm not Tamei. I'm not on top of the mace. I'm inside an ohel. Right? But if you hold that ohel zarek, lo shmei ohel, so then the tumah is going to go up and up and up and make the kohen in the airplane make that kohen tamei. So this became a cause celeb, and everybody decided to get involved. If you look online somewhere, you're going to find some picture of some kohen sitting on an airplane wearing a plastic bag on top of his head. Any of you saw these pictures? And they're there to solve this issue somehow by some complicated lumdus. Now, if you're wearing the plastic bag on top of your head and you have some wood at your feet, maybe we'll talk about this a little bit later, that somehow solves the problem. When this issue came up, so it became different rabbonim had different ways of trying to address this issue. You know, the halacha is that if tumah is contained, if you have a box and the tumah is in the box and there's one tefach between the tumah and the top of the box, so the tumah just stays in the box. So some people said, well, in the coffin, you have a I apologize if this is going to be a little bit gross, but you have a tefach above the corpse before the top of the coffin. So maybe, right, there is no tumah in cemeteries. That's kind of cool, no? Because the corpse is inside the box. So there's a tefach on top of it. Well, they point out that the boxes tend to collapse over time. Especially if you've ever been at a burial, right? People like are dumping big rocks on the coffin. It's very often that like the coffin top just crashes right away. And then once it crashes, you have aloch of tumah ritzuta, of squash tumah. Tumah ritzuta is ola ad l'rakia. So how do you solve the problem of kohanim flying over the cemetery? So some rabbonim try to solve the problem as follows. There's a halacha that safek tumah b'rishus hayachid is tameh, safek tumah b'rishus harabim is tahar. And they say you're not definitely flying over a corpse. It's a safek tumah and it's a rishus harabim because there's at least three people there in the plane with you. Right? The definition of rishus harabim for tumah is three people. So therefore it's okay. Well, that doesn't necessarily work. If you're flying over an entire cemetery, it's inevitable there's going to be some corpse under your plane. So how do we solve this issue of flying over the cemeteries? So there was a great, I think yesterday was the yard site of Reb Meir Shapiro, the founder of the Daf Yomi. He was the Rosh Yeshiva in Chachmei Lublin. There was a second Rosh Yeshiva in Chachmei Lublin after Reb Meir Shapiro died. His name was Rabbi Aryeh Tzvi Frommer, who was called the Kozhik Lover Eloy. He came from a town called Kozhik Lov. So in the tshuvas of the Kozhik Lover, it's called Eretz Tzvi Simen Tzadi Gimel. He has a discussion about, is it permitted for a Kohen Lisa Lamer Chokim Al aeroplane that might go on top of Kvarim? And he talks and talks and talks. And he has a suggestion based on our Gemara. His suggestion based on our Gemara is that when our Taisvis has the discussion about the animals being in Ohel, so we pointed out, what about the oxen? Right, about the door, what about the doors on top of the oxen? Excuse me. So the Ritva writes that the doors on top of the oxen are in Ohel, even though the rule is that Ohel Zaruk is not an Ohel, but that's true only if the Ohel Zaruk is a full-fledged Kli. The case in the Gemara is whether a Kohen could enter Eretz Ha'amim. Can the Kohen go into outside of Eretz Yisrael where there's potential Tuma? Can the Kohen go in the Shita Teva Migdol and the Kohen's in a box? Says the Ritva, the discussion of Ohel Zaruk, Shmei Ohel, Lav Shmei Ohel, is only on a full-fledged Kli, only on the box. But if you have a plain board, so by definition, then I will say that it is considered an Ohel. The rule of Ohel Zaruk is something that's an Ohel, it's a full tent. But if I just have a board that's moving, so the board can protect the Tumah even though it's moving. Right, because it's not a full ohel, the Ritva argues, so therefore it is a chatzitza for tuma. Based on this, the Kashi Glover recommends that if you're a Kohen and you're flying in an airplane, you should put a piece of wood at your feet. And the plain piece of wood at your feet is going to be like the door on top of the animals. And that will stop the tumma from going up. That will stop the tumma from penetrating. That's the Kosher Glover's idea. Based on that, you still have to be worried that the rest of it is going to create a problem. So that's why they ended up sitting inside plastic bags in the airplanes, which looks really weird. It happens at Rachel.
I just don't really understand the Ritva. He's saying a plank of wood is an ohel when it moves because it's really not an ohel.
Right. It's like paradoxical. If you have something which is a box and it's really an ohel, so you say when it's moving, it loses its status of an ohel. When I have something that's protecting from tumma, not because it has the status of an ohel at all, just the wood. So therefore, it doesn't matter if it's moving or not moving.
Oh, usually pieces of wood protect from tumma.
If you have a Well, in this case, I have a piece of wood that is on top of the oxen. So it's going to be a barrier for the tumah, right? It's just a piece of wood. So the halacha of oihol zorek doesn't apply to a plain piece of wood. That's the argument of the ritva.
Okay. Could you also say what we said, what we just quoted? What was we said? Oh, the no devi Yehuda's idea that the plain is only plain because of the humans.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. No. In other words,
the humans are flying the plane. And the humans,
I don't think so. I think that's like very far fetched.
Why? They're literally holding it up.
The human is holding the umbrella. The umbrella is moving. I'm walking with it. The fact that I'm flying a plane, right? What I did is I started a combustion engine that I don't know. It's creative. I'll give you points of creativity. I don't know. I
thought it was so obvious.
Okay. I don't think so. But Rav Shechter has the following suggestion in his Sefer. The story goes like this. The Kolel in YU is called the Katz Kolel, the Marcus and Adina Katz. Marcus Katz is a Kohen. So when they had the dedication of the Kolel, so Rav Shechter decided to give a shiur about whether it was permitted for Marcus Katz to fly in an airplane to the opening of the Kolel, because as a Kohen, maybe he's not allowed to fly in an airplane because maybe there are graves underneath it. That was the shiur that Rav Shechter gave, which he wrote up in his Sefer Be'ikvei Hatzon. Rav Shechter basically develops an idea, which is that when I say that Tumah goes up ad l'rakia, it means ad v'lo ad b'chlal. The Tumah goes until some area called Rakia. But anything above that space called Rakia, the Tumah does not go there. There was like just a Jew recently who flew into space. No, William Shatner. He's like 173 years old, and somehow they let him fly into space, right? You're not going to be Tumah if you are flying around in a spacecraft. It's too high up. There has to be some stopping point. So if Shechter says the stopping point is cloud level. So if you are flying over a graveyard, but you are above the level of the clouds, if Shechter feels that there is no tumah, you have to be careful about a situation like Chulon or like that airport right near JFK. You have to make sure that you don't reach the airports right before you are at a certain elevation, which is like cloud level. Cloud level is not that high, no? I think airplanes fly at like 20,000 feet or something. Is that correct? I think.
Yeah, doesn't cloud level vary though?
Yes, cloud level does vary. But certainly you reach a point when you're flying that you're above cloud level. That's the assumption. A cloud level might be like a foggy day. So cloud level is going to be like, you know, on the ground. I'm not exactly sure. I don't know if there's an absolute definition of cloud level, but like, you know it when you're above it. That's the point. So Rav Shechter's argument is interesting. No one really knows the answer to this question. It's not a simple question about what's the heter for Kohanim to fly. It's not a simple answer for the question also, you know, when they package bodies to send them to Eretz Yisrael. So on some level, that's worse if you're a Kohen, no? Because you're in the same container as the corpse. Now, over there, it's a little paradoxical, because if Ohel Zarek lo shmei Ohel, so then I'm okay, right? Because I'm not in the same container as the corpse. Because we're both in this Ohel Zarek, which doesn't help. But it's not clear that Ohel Zarek won't help if we're both in the same container. That's already like advanced Talmud. But for our purposes now, I think we developed this idea about Ohel Zarek enough. It's an interesting point. It comes up in this Tosfos. The Ohel Zarek, and we spoke about the Noda Yehuda's comment And we spoke about the, what's it called? We spoke about this truth of the kosher clover, about flying over cemeteries, etc. Any other questions or comments? Hi, Zoe.
Hi, Rabbi Schwartz. This might be a really basic question. Why does the plastic do anything for you to protect you from Tumah?
I think the idea is that the plastic makes it like a separate tent. I need the boards underneath me, but I still have to make sure that I'm not enclosed in the same tent as everybody else. So what I do is I have the plastic, and somehow that makes me completely separated. So the Tumah won't go through my board, and I don't have to worry that the Tumah is going to end up over there and then shooting all the way across inside the same cabin, because I have a, what's it called? I have plastic.
I guess my question was kind of like, plastic is sufficient to stop Tumah?
It becomes a separate ohel. Plastic itself is not makabel Tumah. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Plastic is awesome. Okay, ladies. Yes.
Oh, just a comment and maybe a question. I feel like I heard a shiur on this at some point, and one of the solutions proposed was that modern airplanes have like a double, kind of like the same way you said, between the coffin and the ground, there's like a space. So in modern airplanes where the passengers sit, there's at least a space between them and like the outside of the plane. But I don't know if that, it's metal. So I don't know.
That may or may not help. If you hold Ohel Zarek, doesn't count. So the space between them doesn't really help. It happens the way they package Mason to send them to Israel. They have people who are experts in ways of packaging the mace that the Tumah will remain contained. They put like the coffin inside a special Tumah-proof container, and that works. None of this is simple. The questions of getting Mason to Israel, I think in Ben-Gurion Airport recently, or not recently, when they redid the airport like 10, 15 years ago, what they did is they had to, there's another problem. When the plane lands, right, so you're going to take out this cargo. Well, if the cargo bin is under the same ceiling as everything else, so the entire airport can become Tumah. So they had to, again, the Rabbonim worked very hard to solve these issues. These are not simple matters. Okay, we love this stuff. It's awesome. Okay, Chevra, have a good night. Have a good Shabbos. It's a pleasure learning with you.
Thanks, Rabbi Schwartz. Have a good Shabbos.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.